Mr. Liss, good morning to you.
Good morning. Please report, Nathan Liss, This is an error proceeding appeal from the District Court's judgment reversing the County Court's judgment. The District Court concluded to respond to on appeal that the defendant is entitled to a new trial on the DUI conviction. This is blood draw was obtained pursuant to post-arrest chemical test advisement or ACTA that is invalid in light of Birchfield. As set forth in our brief, the state submits to the district court error in two respects. One, by failing to consider whether the blood draw was consensual despite the invalid ACTA. And number two, by failing to consider whether the good faith exception to the exclusionary rule applies to pre-Birchfield blood draws. As far as consent, the issue here is whether the use of an invalid ACTA renders consent to a blood draw invalid and involuntary per se. The answer is obviously no, as Birchfield itself makes clear. One of the cases in Birchfield involved a blood draw obtained pursuant to such an advisement. Upon finding that advisement invalid, the court reversed and remanded for determination of whether that blood draw was consensual despite that invalid ACTA. We submit the same determination should have been made here. The state was never given an opportunity to address the issue or present evidence on the issue. The state should have been given that opportunity. The district court failed by not doing so. Set forth in our brief, given the lack of record on consent, we're not actually asking this court to make a determination on that issue. We are asking you to clarify that consent should be considered before these pre-Birchfield blood draws are simply thrown out. As far as the second issue regarding the good faith exception, we submit the district court also erred by not considering this before throwing out the pre-Birchfield blood draw. As with the issue of consent, Birchfield itself states that this issue should also be addressed or should have also been addressed on remand.
Counsel, the footnote 9 that you cite in your brief, the first part of that does state that they will have to address whether the search was carried out pursuant to a state statute. They cite the North Carolina case, which talks about mistake of law. But then they go on and they say, and the evidence is offered in an administrative rather than criminal proceeding. None of the three petitioners in Birchfield were involved in administrative proceedings, at least from that factual basis. They may have been, but it wasn't part of the case. They were all involved in a criminal proceeding. How do you read that second part where it says, and the evidence is offered in administrative? How should we read that?
Balin's case did involve an administrative proceeding. And that's the one that they
were
reversing.
Which case?
Balin. The one that they were reversing for a determination of consent or alternatively good faith. That one was an administrative proceeding. That's set forth in the opinion. And so I believe that's the context in which they were making that comment since it was going back.
Did you talk about the North Carolina case?
The Balin one, yes. The one of the three Balin did involve an administrative.
There's only two cases cited in that footnote. And it's, I believe it's pronounced Hyen versus North Carolina and then the Pennsylvania Board of Probation versus Scott.
Right.
So I'm not familiar with this other case that you're talking about.
No, Balin was one of the three petitioners in the Birchfield case. As far as that footnote, they were reversing in the context of Balin's case, and the footnote pertains to what should happen on remand in Balin's case.
Okay, but Balin was facing a criminal proceeding, wasn't he?
As I reread the opinion again yesterday, I believe it's pretty clear that it was purely administrative. They noted that, and then I also reread the case on remand from Balin's case.
Okay, let's say that it is administrative. Does that impact, because the case we have today is clearly criminal, when they reference an administrative proceeding, does that have any impact on the other part of that where they say, look at the state statute?
No. I mean, good faith clearly applies in the criminal context as well, and so that's why we're submitting it in these cases. That case took place in the context of an administrative proceeding, and that's why they made that comment, but the good faith exception clearly applies in the criminal context as well, as it did in Hines. I mean, Hines is a criminal case. I guess they didn't apply good faith. They said in a Fourth Amendment violation there, but...
They don't use the term good faith at all, or phrase good faith at all in the North Carolina case. It's all about mistake of law.
Right, and therefore no Fourth Amendment violation, so they didn't need to get into the exclusionary rule in Hines. But in DeFilippo and in Illinois v. Kroll, for example, those clearly were criminal cases, and they found that the exclusionary rule didn't apply. In Illinois v. Kroll, as we pointed out in our brief, that involved a search pursuant to a state statute that was later found to be unconstitutional. And they said the exclusionary rule doesn't apply here because the sole purpose of the exclusionary rule, certainly unlawful police conduct, there is no deterrence effect gained by punishing police for the mistakes of the legislature. We would submit that the same rationale holds true here. This search in this case took place pursuant to our implied consent laws. There's no reason to believe prior to Birchfield that our implied consent laws were in any way invalid.
So, I believe you've noted this in your brief, but have other states bought into the good faith argument, or other courts?
They have, Your Honor. I ran a search on that yesterday, and there's actually been minimal activity on it. Kansas Court of Appeals has squarely addressed this issue, and their opinion reads much like our brief. That case is State v. Schmidt, 53 Can-App, 2nd, 225. That's from 2016. A couple of appellate courts in Minnesota have not squarely addressed the issue, but they have reversed and remanded with instructions to consider both consent and good faith, which I think bodes in our favor.
So what's going out here where the appellate courts are laboring in the vineyard to figure out the breadth of Birchfield and how to implement it? Is that right? In terms of not a simple statement, no warrant, no warrant, big problem.
It's not that simple at all.
It's not that simple.
No, not at all. And that's why we're trying to get clarification.
Excuse me, so the objective of this proceeding is what outcome do you seek at this proceeding before us?
Well, as we acknowledge in our brief, that depends on, we acknowledge under Kleckner, as it stands, we're not entitled to relief, even if you agree with either or both of our exceptions that we've raised in our appeal here. But as set forth in our brief, we agree with Justice Castle's dissent in Kleckner, and we respectfully request that you revisit and reconsider that decision. I would also note that I...
And in this case, we have, what, a district court sitting as an intermediate appellate court. Is that correct?
Yes.
And under the error proceeding statutes, how you're here and we've granted leave, but under the statutes, how is that possible? And what are the options in your view for orders in terms of the effect of a ruling if we agreed with you on substance?
Well. Assuming you were to revisit Kleckner and go back to the prior case law establishing that you could reinstate proper conviction from the county court in this context, I guess that would be the relief that we're seeking, to reverse the district court's judgment in this case, reinstate the conviction, and I suppose in terms of status, they'd be moving back to relitigate the issues that were raised on the field. This court never got to those issues. But
would it be reinstating the conviction, or would it be directing the district court to remand to the county court to determine whether the conviction should be set aside or should stand?
Well, if, say, you can agree with us on good faith, then good faith applies, in which case the county court's judgment should stand. There's no reason for the district court to remand it back to the county court. If consent needs to be considered, I guess that's a separate question, but I guess I would submit that if the court agrees with us, that the district court should be reinstating the county court's judgment, and then, like I said, there was still an appeal pending from the defendant raising several other claims that might need to be taken up by the district court, but I think the county court's judgment should be reinstated, not reversed by the district court.
So, and it depends whether you're talking about the consent or the good faith.
I think it probably
would. And if you were successful on the merits, going back to the effect of the ruling, where the error proceeding statutes state defendant legally placed in jeopardy in the trial court, what do you think that phrase "legally placed in jeopardy" means in the legislative words? Is that the same as constitutional double jeopardy?
I guess I'm not sure. I guess I've kind of understood that to me as sort of the classic sense of when somebody's placed in jeopardy.
In Nebraska, amongst those examples would be, say, in a bench trial, the trial court is taking evidence. The matter may not have come to a termination, but that would be the event of placed legally in jeopardy.
Right. That, I guess, is my understanding of that phrase and not my English.
Counsel, you said earlier that you would want it to go back clear to the county court. In order to do that, then are you asking us now to decide the good faith issue here at this level versus remanding it for the district court to look at that issue?
It's a question of law. I think it would be appropriate for this court to resolve that issue. Our position is that the district court failed in failing to consider and apply the good faith exception. We believe that it does apply, and yes, we are asking that this court to make that determination.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm out of time. If there are no further questions, we would ask that you reverse the judgment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Mercure, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Steve Mercure. I'm an attorney from Tecumseh, Nebraska. I'd also note for the court's reference that my certified senior law student, Linda Mahoney, is here in court today. She's not appearing to argue the case, but I do want to recognize her efforts.
Thank you.
In respect to this particular proceeding, I guess the most important thing for Mr. Hatfield would probably be the court's interpretation of State v. Fleckner, specifically the error proceeding statute 29-2316, because if the court follows State v. Fleckner in this case, then for Mr. Hatfield at least, the court may make some new law regarding the issues raised by Birchfield, but we won't be going back to revisit this issue in the district court or the county court. Each county, Nebraska.
Counsel, if we follow the Kleckner decision, in essence, the district court becomes the Supreme Court of Nebraska, doesn't it?
What's that again?
If we continue to follow the Kleckner majority, then a district court, like in this situation, in essence, becomes the Nebraska Supreme Court, doesn't it?
That's true. Yes, Your Honor. But I'd also note that, you know, I think that the Kleckner case was based on double jeopardy principles, and really in this situation, that's what we're talking about. This case has been ongoing for nearly 3 years in December of this year. If the court would decide at this point in time we're going to set it aside and send it back, we still have other issues to delve into on an appeal status, so we might be back up here again on that same case. I don't think it's fair to Mr. Hatfield, and I don't think it's fair to the defendants in that situation to be put in that position. That's what I'm asking the court to consider when you're determining, first of all, whether or not the error proceeding statute in your state, in the ruling of State v. Kleckner, is still good law in the state of Nebraska. It's very important for, obviously, the defendants throughout the state who are faced with this type of
situation. Well, let's back up. This case is here on an error proceeding,
that's
which
correct.
The legislature has deemed to be an exception to the general principle that the state is unable to appeal an unfavorable criminal ruling,
right.
Grossly speaking, right?
Yes.
Okay, so that we would be looking at the error proceeding statute to determine the breadth of the effect of our rulings.
Correct. I believe State v. Kleckner, the court clearly approximately 2 years ago made clear what his position was regarding that statute. And I think that's totally wrong. That's what we're asking for the following.
Mr. Mercure, what's unfair about holding a defendant who's been convicted in the county court and mistakenly had that conviction reversed in the district court? What's unfair about holding him to the conviction?
Well, we would certainly disagree with the concept that he was mistakenly put into the district court.
Well, but that's the substance of the state's claim here today.
Well, I understand that. We obviously respectively disagree with their interpretation.
So if we agree with the state on the merits, there's nothing unfair, is there, about reinstating the conviction?
Subjects him to double jeopardy. That's my position.
So your position would be, in answer to Justice Castle's question, the question would be, is that what the statute would require in terms of the effect of the ruling?
That's correct.
So is the meaning of legally placed in jeopardy, which is the legally that's placed in jeopardy in the trial court, right?
That's correct.
Right, that's what we're looking at, this statutory invitation or permission by the legislature to do some stuff but not do everything.
Assuming we were going to go the other way, you want to talk about the merits of the state's substantive arguments.
Sure. Let's talk briefly And in this particular case, we believe that Birchfield stands firmly for the proposition under implied consent laws, motorists cannot be deemed to have consented to a blood test when faced with criminal charges for refusal. We think that's a, basically that's a hallmark of Birchfield. That's what it stands for. And in this particular case, the facts are very clear in this particular case. Mr. Hatfield was read an implied consent advisory form. He consented to the blood test because he was informed that if he was, he would be charged with a separate criminal offense for refusing to submit to that draw. That is clearly in the evidence. That's what this case is about. And so in that situation, that consent can only be classified as involuntary under Birchfield.
And how do you reconcile that argument with the U.S. Supreme Court's remand to consider the totality of the circumstances?
Well, let's talk about that. That's the Balin part of Birchfield. And Balin involved an administrative license proceeding. It was not a criminal proceeding. And I think, you know, in deference, Mr. List correctly noted for Justice Kelch that, in fact, Balin did involve an administrative law proceeding, and in that particular case, it indicated that the issue became whether or not the officer had acted in accordance with the state statute, and also whether or not it was an administrative rather than a criminal proceeding. So I think there's a big distinction to be drawn in the three cases as far as Birchfield's concerned, because in the administrative law proceeding, that's the one they remanded to send it back to take a look at. It wasn't the others. Birchfield itself never said anything about the good faith exception being applicable or the court should review because of good faith exception issue. And so I know the state wants cases like this to be sent back remanded to determine voluntariness of the consent, but actually for judicial efficiency, once you have in the record the fact that the implied consent form was read to the defendant before he consented to the draw, that's clear enough. There's nothing else about that that's going to make that voluntary, and you're going to have to, at that point in time, say, well, that's clear on the record, and that's clearly, he did not consent.
So your position is there really are no facts developed?
No.
It's the legal significance of it.
Yeah, to remand him for voluntariness of consent would just be an exercise of futility, because there really isn't anything else to be determined at that point. That's what Birchfield stands for.
Let me ask you, what evidence was offered by the state at the trial with regard to the DUI complaint? Did they offer evidence of a field sobriety test or other things other than the blood test, or was the blood test the principal evidence used?
They were offered, and I would note that Judge Quirzlin, in his decision, made clear that there was insufficient evidence to convict my client without the blood test. So it's clear
okay,
on the record.
So then we get to a first-tier review of the conviction in the district court because the state brought, or this action came up to the district court. And the district court concludes that the evidence is not admissible, blood test, right? So how can the district court remand the case for anything but a dismissal?
Not sure about that, but
Well, what other evidence? If the trial court's already determined that there is no other evidence with regard to the only thing used to convict was the blood test, and the district court finds that the blood test is not admissible, is there any evidence to convict the defendant?
I don't think there was. I think that if in fact.
So what's going to be retried? What will be retried in the county court as ordered by the district court concerning the DUI? No blood test admissible, and the court has already concluded that the field sobriety tests are not sufficient to convict. What's the purpose of a retrial?
I don't have any idea, Judge. My thought is that I don't think there'll ever be a trial take place because the state knows they don't have sufficient evidence.
There was a jury trial in the county court, correct?
Yes.
And the county court allowed the case to go to the jury?
Yes.
And was it instructed not only as to the test prong of the statute, but also to the general operating under the influence?
Correct.
So we don't know precisely what the jury decided on that. It could have been on the general behavior.
All I can say, I'm still mystified by what the jury decided as well.
All right.
But I think Justice Kasten's point being, if there is this right, observations that were evidence other than the blood test, would the sum total of the evidence before the jury, including inadmissible evidence, be sufficient?
It won't be. I'm quite confident of that.
If this case goes back to the county court, there'd be a motion to suppress, I'm assuming, filed by you at that point. Is that reasonable?
I'm not certain about that, Judge.
Well, you have Birchfield now to deal with, and you also have good faith exception, whether the officer had the good faith to go forward with the request for the blood test. So you'd want to address those either in a motion to eliminate or a motion to suppress, I would assume. Is that reasonable? So there would be something for the county court to consider at that point, where there is a good faith exception for the officer's request for the blood test.
Again, I want to go back to what we talked about before, that in this particular case, you know, I don't think that the good faith exception, Birchfield does not indicate that the court should go back and review good faith exception because of...
Let's say that this, hypothetically, this court says, yes, you can do a good faith analysis. Can we do that, or does that have to go back to the trial court?
It would have to go back to the trial court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. The next case of the day.